Now a bright blue globe appears against a dark star-speckled sky. A logo reads, MCA Universal Home Video. Fade to black. In outer space, two wispy blue bands encircle a spinning planet Earth, and large gold letters read, Universal and MCA Company. Again, the screen fades to black, then fades up on a Major League Baseball game. The batter swings and hits a single up the middle. The man on second base runs to third, then slides into home plate. Our view moves up through the stands, filled with grinning, clapping people in 1950s clothing. A young boy and his father reach the top of an entry ramp. The boy gawks at the crowd. His dad leads him to a seat.
We missed four innings.
Well, like I said, I had to stop and do some business. Here, sit down.
The man gives his son a program.
Hey, you usher, come here. Can I talk to you a second?
The boy watches his father hand the usher some money.
Gil, this is Sting. He's going to watch you for a while. I have some friends I meet. I'll meet you right here, huh? For the ninth inning. Have fun, kid.
Handing Gil a box of popcorn, his father pats him on the shoulder, then jogs away down the steps. The usher sits beside the boy.
So, Gilly, big baseball fan?
Kinda.
Yeah? Dad bring you here a lot?
Once a year on my birthday. Then he pays an usher to watch me.
Oh, I see.
But you have to understand, my father, in his own childhood, was without a positive male influence.
Huh?
His own father kicked him out when he was 15. So my dad was taught to see child raising as a job, a burden, a prison, rather than a playground. You understand what I'm saying?
You don't talk like a kid.
Yeah, well, I'm not really a kid.
You're not a duck.
This is a memory of when I was a kid. I'm 35 now. I have kids of my own. You don't really even exist. You're an amalgam.
A what?
Gil rolls his eyes.
A combination of several ushers my dad left me with over the years. I've combined them into one memory.
Why?
This was a great symbolic moment in my life. My father dumping me with you. It's why I swore things would be different with my kids. That's my dream. Strong, happy, confident kids.
That's great. That's great. You know, you got a lovely family, and I'm a goddamn amalgam.
Gil?
He turns. A woman smiles at him.
Who's that?
That's my wife.
Nice.
Gil?
Yeah?
The game's over, honey.
St. Louis Cardinals wish to thank you for attending.
Now an adult, Gil looks up at his wife and three kids.
Let's go. Come on, Justin. You want to walk?
Justin.
Come on, let's walk. It's fun. Come on, let's walk. Sure you want to walk? There we go.
I was born to make you happy.
Gil picks up his toe-headed two-year-old.
Think it just my style. Everywhere I go, telling everyone I know, that I love to see you smile.
Gil, his wife, and two more kids, a boy and a girl, struggled through the parking lot with armloads of St. Louis Cardinals souvenirs. Titles appear. Imagine Entertainment presents a Brian Grazer production, a Ron Howard film, Steve Martin as Gil in Parenthood, starring Tom Hulce as Larry, Rick Moranis as Nathan, Martha Plimpton as Julie, Keanu Reeves as Todd, Jason Robards as Frank, Mary Steenburgen as Karen, and Diane Wiest as Helen. Co-starring Harley Kozak, Dennis Dugan, Leif Phoenix, Jason Fisher, Paul Link, Eileen Ryan, and Helen Shaw as Grandma. Music by Randy Newman. Now Gil opens the door to their minivan, and the dirty-faced, toe-headed Justin climbs inside. Outside, the little girl, about seven, sits wrapped around her father's ankle. He paces, pretending not to see her. More titles appear. Casting by Jane Jenkins, CSA, and Janet Hershenson, CSA. Gil's wife, a pretty, willowy woman with curly black hair, puts Justin in a car seat. The older boy, about 8, leans against the van, poring over a pile of baseball cards. His dad leads him into the van. The little girl sneaks out and wanders into the busy parking lot.
You're a rat.
Make it all worth
while.
Retrieving Taylor, Gil kicks a seat cushion under the van. Justin gazes patiently at his mother as she attempts to clean his face, then gives up. More titles appear. Costume designer, Ruth Morley. Production designer, Todd Halliwell. Director of photography, Donald McAlpine, ASC. Film editors, Michael Hill and Daniel Haley. Executive producer, Joseph M. Caracciolo. Story by Lowell Ganz, Babalu Mandel, and Ron Howard. Now on a highway.
When you're sliding into first and you're feeling something burst, diarrhea, diarrhea. When you're sliding into third and you juice a turd, diarrhea, diarrhea. When
more titles. Screenplay by Lowell Ganz and Babalu Mandel. Diarrhea. Produced by Brian diarrhea. Grazer.
When you're sitting in your Chevy and your shirts are feeling heavy, diarrhea, diarrhea.
Kevin, honey, where'd you learn that song?
Last summer at camp, Mom.
Ah, that was money well spent.
Later, sunset casts a peachy glow on the clouds as Gil turns on the van's lights. Another title, directed by Ron Howard. Later, Gil carries a comatose Kevin up a set of stairs and across a hall to his bedroom. Lying the sleeping 8-year-old on the top bunk, Gil turns around and leans against it with a thoughtful look across the room.
That's what you're going to sleep in? You'll get cold.
Naked, Justin wears a double holster and a cowboy hat.
Perfect.
Gil, Taylor isn't feeling well. She wants you.
That's those hot dogs.
I'll deal with Kevin and Justin.
Hey, what do you say later, when the kids are asleep, I wear this outfit?
She sees Justin and smirks.
She's in our bed.
Justin pretends to shoot. On her parents' bed, Taylor sits holding her stomach.
Hi, Daddy.
What's the matter, honey? You don't feel so good?
Mm-mm.
You feel like you want to throw up?
Okay.
Gil, oh my God, oh Taylor, baby, oh sweetie, oh. Gil, why are you just standing there? Oh,
I'm
sweetie.
Waiting for her head to spin around.
You'll be all right. You'll be okay.
We glimpse the front of their gray 2-story house, then return to the bedroom. The fit, prematurely gray Gil kisses his wife. Wearing a lavender nightshirt, she nestles into the pillow, and they gaze deeply into each other's eyes. They roll onto their sides in an embrace.
Oh, can you come with me to see Kevin's principal on Monday morning?
Oh, I love it when you talk to me about school and meetings. Now talk to me about shopping.
No, I know. Oh,
go on.
I'm sorry. I just remembered now. I've been meaning to ask you. Okay.
Fine. I'll be there.
Okay.
He pulls slowly back. She stretches.
What's the matter?
Nothing. I was a little tense before, but
No, I mean with Kevin. Why are we going to see his principal?
Oh, because his teacher said he's been making that face again.
What, this?
He tightens his lips.
Yes, the tense face.
He makes that same face at Little League.
Gil stands.
You know what his teacher asked me?
What?
If we'd ever taken him for a psychiatric evaluation.
What?
She was just asking.
Why, because he makes a face? Has she ever looked in the mirror?
Well, you know, the face, the crying, the nervousness.
They mentioned the crying?
Yeah. You know, he doesn't really finish his work.
Gil lies across the bed with his chin on her thigh.
Hey. We'll talk to them on Monday. Don't worry, I'm sure we'll be fine. Come here.
She smiles as he presses playfully against her.
Where was I? Here? Was I here?
Yeah.
I was there already?
Mm-hmm.
With a sensuous kiss, he runs a hand down over her shoulder and cups her right breast. She arches her back a little.
You know, that really pisses me off. Kid's a little different, a little special, needs a little more attention. Teacher's going to put a label on him. Problem kid. When we go see Kevin's principal, let's find out who his teacher's going to be next year and make sure it's not one of these hysterics.
You're right, Gil. You know, Kevin's great. He can't be that much of a problem.
Right.
Now, if it was my sister's kid.
Gary.
Now, there's a kid with problems.
Now in close-up, a boy of about 13 peeks out of his bedroom door, his grayish-green eyes shifting back and forth. He has smooth skin, longish, dirty blonde hair, and a thin scar between his upper lip and nose. Placing a crumpled paper bag on the floor, he secures the door with a padlock. A woman looks up from the dining room table as he sneaks into the kitchen.
Hi, Gary. You're up so early.
Yeah.
His mother's eyes flash worriedly on the paper bag. She puts on a smile as he turns around.
Where are you going?
Out.
What's in the bag?
Nothing.
He picks up a skateboard.
Hey, Gary, you know, the whole family's coming over tonight. There's a big surprise. Grandma and Grandpa are going to be here, and Uncle Bill and Aunt Karen, they're bringing their kids. Aunt Susie's going to be here, and Uncle Nathan, their kids. And it's nice talking to you.
She leans her back against the door and closes her eyes. Picking up a notebook.
Julie!
She heads for a door in the hall near Gary's room.
Hey, Julie!
Yeah?
Julie, can I come in for a minute?
A skinny, yeah. Pug-nosed girl.
Julie, I really need your help. The whole family's coming over tonight. I don't know why, but the place is a mess. Could you just give me a hand and help me?
Just a few minutes.
Are you all right? I thought I heard you moaning last night.
Well, I kind of had a little bit of a stomach ache, but it's fine now.
It's gone. You hate me?
What?
You know, for making you study so much and giving up all your dates.
No, you were right.
Honey, I'm telling you, those SAT scores are your ticket. And, sweetie, you know, once you get to school, you're gonna meet a lot of guys that you like just as well as that Todd.
Why do you always say that Todd? It just sounds so...
You're right. I'm sorry. It's been pleasant for a moment. Okay, I guess I'm just gonna give everybody spaghetti and salad, and I better cook a steak for my dad. See you later, honey.
The plain-faced Julie looks up.
Are you okay?
A guy in briefs slides out from under the bed.
Man, your mother can talk.
He pulls on a pair of jeans.
Gosh, she hates my ass.
It's such a cute ass.
He wiggles his buns at her.
Last night she heard the moaning. She thought it was me.
Yeah?
Mm-hmm. So you're gonna have to try and control yourself for it.
He drops his pants.
With you? It's impossible.
They kneel on the bed and grab each other in an intense kiss. They fall onto the mattress. Then Todd pops up on his knees.
Ooh, wait.
What?
I brought something.
Ooh, good.
She leans over and turns on a tape. Todd wiggles a camera.
We can record our love.
Susan? Hi, sis. It's Helen. Yeah, did I loan you my big platter? Oh, great, great. Yeah, I felt it. Would you bring it over tonight? I just need it to serve. Oh, listen, Julie got 1291 on her SATs. I know. I feel so proud of her. It's great. Yeah, how's Patty?
Oh, we're a little disappointed with the effort she's been giving lately towards her work.
A trim woman with a cordless phone.
Math. French. Oh, everything's gone down. Necessary for the degree of achievement. Nathan's talking to her right now.
Aspire.
He's trying to figure out what's wrong.
Look, Patty, all I'm saying is if you want to have just an ordinary academic career and attend an ordinary university, that's your prerogative. But I must tell you, I think you're selling yourself way short.
Susan sits beside him.
How's it going?
I don't know. Sometimes I feel as though we want it more than she does.
Patty, you know we love you. Could you just give your father that little extra effort he's looking for?
A little blonde girl, about 4.
Okay, Mama.
Nathan gives a smug smile.
That's all I ask.
Now in Helen's yard.
I got you. Come on, Dad, Kevin.
No.
Gil's kids play with toy guns.
Kevin!
No!
Helen! Time to come in now, children.
Okay. Hey, Grandma.
They race past their dad.
Hey,
he throws up his hands, then bumps into Susan and an older man.
Grandma. Hey, Gil, you have a good memory. Was it yours or Helen or Susan's wedding I got drunk at?
It was all 3, Dad. Congratulations.
Well, which one did I punch the band leader?
That was mine. We have photos. I'm having him blown up for the commitment hearings.
You think he's funny, huh? Well, when he was a kid, he wasn't this funny. Stayed in his room all day. Boy, you were a moody little son of a bitch.
Gee, I wonder why.
Gil's wife and Helen in the kitchen.
You remember that little guy who wouldn't leave my side?
I know.
Well, now, you know, if I take a step towards him, he just takes a step away. Yeah. I don't know what's happening to him. You know, he's just so unhappy, and he won't talk to me, and I don't know how to help him.
Did you ever consider having Ed talk to him?
Are you kidding? He won't even acknowledge he's got these kids. And then he's got his new wife and his new kids.
She chucks a steak in the oven.
I don't even fix my kids' teeth anymore. He says it makes him uncomfortable.
Please.
Yeah, I wish he'd drop his drill down his pants.
Are you seeing anybody?
Well, Gary's biology teacher asked me out.
Biology? That's promising.
No. He's not the type I usually go for.
In the living room, Patty reads with her dad.
The Penal Colony by Franz Kafka.
Hey, Nathan. Patty a doctor yet? Mark, if you will. All right. Our children are more capable of retaining and absorbing information than we are, and yet we insist on treating them like adorable little morons.
Gil holds Justin upside down, his feet wiggling.
What are you saying? Patty can learn things I can't learn?
He puts Justin down, then watches.
Patty, which one of these is the square root of 8,649?
Nathan lays out four cards covered in red dots. Patty studies them, then points to one.
93.
Nathan shows Patty's correct answer on the back. Gil smacks the side of his own head. Nathan puts down the card and crosses to him.
They're like sponges, Gil, just waiting to absorb.
I want this.
See?
Justin picks up a card.
Take my advice. Forget about Kevin and Taylor. It's too late. Work on Justin.
Actually, Justin is quite bright in his preschool class. He was the only...
The toe-headed Justin stuffs one of the red dots in his mouth.
Slow down, Justin. I'll get you some dip.
Eating another dot, the boy grins. Now the three moms in the kitchen.
Oh, you remember that guy you went out with in college, Jeffrey Sanders? You know, he always chased me out of the room whenever he came over.
Oh, yeah.
I saw him today.
God, what a loser, huh?
In a Rolls.
I meant me.
What is that?
A bowl of mushy food.
Oh, Nathan and Patty and I are power eating. We bring our own food everywhere. Turned me on to it, and I never felt better.
Helen and Susan's father rushes in.
This is it. Everybody in the living room. This is the big surprise.
Okay, Frank.
Frank's wife opens the front door.
Oh, Larry!
A young man in sunglasses and a leather jacket.
Oh, hi, son! Oh, boy. Great to see you!
Shit. Well put.
Oh.
Gil leans down to Justin.
That's my kid brother, Larry. Your uncle. Don't give him any money.
Just a little something for being the best dad in the world.
Yeah.
I found it a couple of months ago for your collection.
Helen and Susan roll their eyes.
Oh, this is great. A Steps.
A red model car.
You got it. Spend it on the people you love. Right.
The curly-haired Larry takes off his glasses.
Is this Grandma?
Yeah, she's still alive.
Frank's wife gives him a withering look. Larry hugs his grandmother.
Jesus, Grandma, you got short.
I'm shrinking.
Bummer.
Grinning, Larry turns around.
Gilbo.
He holds out his arms. So does Gary.
How long has it been? 3 years?
About that.
You stopped wearing your turban.
Yeah. My God, Susan, you look great. If you weren't my sister... Helen.
She hugs him reluctantly.
I know it's been hard.
Dad?
A wide-eyed black child with an afro peeks in the front door.
You were supposed to wait outside so I could introduce you.
Frank's mouth hangs open.
Well, why don't you do it now, Larry?
Across the room, Julie suppresses a laugh and smiles. Larry grins and moves toward the child.
Everybody, this is my son. Cool.
Grandma's jaw drops, and Gil stares.
Did he say cool?
Cool. Your son.
It's a long story. Let's eat.
Gil puts his hand on Nathan's shoulder.
Keep Patty away from my brother. He'll suck the intelligence right out of her.
Later in the dining room.
Who is adorable? Adorable. Why didn't you ever write us you had a son?
I didn't know myself until a couple of months ago.
The kids sit at one table, the adults at another.
A few years ago, I was living in Vegas with this girl. Showgirl. She was in that show, Elvis on Ice. Anywho, we drifted apart, as people do in these complicated times. And then a couple of months ago, she shows up with Cool, tells me, you watch him, I shot someone, I have to leave the country. That's a parent? Huh. Anyway, we're back in town because I've got something really huge cooking. Enormous. Monster. Dad, this is it. From now on, I'm going to be taking care of all of you.
This isn't another get-rich-quick scheme, is it, Larry?
What's wrong with getting rich quick? Quick is the best way to get rich. Look who I'm talking to. You ever see her family? They find a nickel, they huddle together and bury it like squirrels. What's the deal, son? What do you have going?
Has anyone heard of hydroponics?
Nathan perks up.
Well, that's great, Larry. Hydroponics is the growing of plants without soil. It's very exciting. What are you using, coarse sand or suspension hydroponics?
I don't... Hey, there's a guy with glasses and a lab coat that makes that decision. I make the deal. And I got to thinking, Cools had no kind of life, no family. So while I'm locking this thing down, I thought it would be nice if we stayed with you.
With that?
A couple of weeks.
The thing is, Larry, we don't have the big house anymore, you know. We didn't need it. We just had the one bedroom for us and one for Grandma.
Well, Grandma's welcome to stay with us for a while. I think it'd be valuable for Patty to have a multi-generational influence.
Fine with me.
Well, I'll have to give you a list of her medications as when and how much. You'll have to pick up her shower chair. There's the batteries for a hearing aid, magnifying glass for reading.
The room goes dark.
Oh, geez.
What happened?
Your mouth used up all the power. Oh. Don't worry, Dad. We can still find the bar.
I'll get a flashlight.
I'll get it, sis.
Dad, what happened?
Where is it? In the bedroom?
It's in the night.
I'm getting a flashlight.
Kevin.
Oh,
good.
Okay. Kevin.
Kevin. Oh, no, I don't like it in the dark.
Honey, this is a blackout. It's a temporary interruption in the electrical supply of the home.
It's okay, honey. Something's busted.
Where's the switch?
That doesn't look like my house.
Here, bring it here.
Oh, here it is. What is this?
The lights come on.
Oh!
Everyone turns to see Gil holding a foot-long vibrator. Helen covers her face as he leaves the room.
Mommy, what was that?
That was an electric ear cleaner.
It was kind of big.
It sure was.
Larry tries not to laugh. Daytime at Kevin's school.
I mean, I don't think you really have to worry about it. The point is that once they see us, then they'll realize that we're fine, and then the kid is fine. It's not something...
Gil and his wife walk up the front steps, now a gray-haired principal in a business suit.
Gil? Karen? I think we're going to have to be very careful about Kevin's educational environment.
Absolutely.
With that in mind, I don't think Kevin should come back here next fall. I'm going to recommend that he be transferred to a school that offers special education classes.
You mean because he's so smart?
Well, actually, I mean a class for children with emotional problems.
Gil and Karen gape at her. A balding man enters.
Hi. Sorry I'm late. You must be the Buckmans. I'm Dr. Jeffrey Lucas.
Dr. Lucas is a child psychologist. He's been observing Kevin for the last couple of months.
Dr. Lucas sits beside the principal.
Why?
Mr. Buckman, this is a public school. 38 kids to a class. We estimate that Kevin's teacher spent at least 20% of her time dealing with Kevin. That class is going to finish the year behind. It isn't fair.
Kevin is a very sweet, very sensitive, extremely tense little boy. He needs some special attention.
Gil fidgets in his chair.
It's because he was first.
Hmm?
It's because he was our first. I mean, I think we were very tense when Kevin was little. If he got a scratch, we were hysterical. But the third kid, you know, you let him juggle knives.
On the other hand, Kevin may have been like this in the womb.
Recent studies indicate that these things are all chemical.
Standing, Gil points at Karen.
She smoked grass.
Gil! I never smoked when I was pregnant.
Yeah, but in college you were like a chimney. I thought you were going to join a reggae band. Ago. I'm just saying there could have been some chromosome distortion.
Well, you let them do anything. You let them watch TV just like
so we'll
that.
So we'll throw the TVs out. We'll put the TVs in the garbage then. And you and I will perform more some Shakespeare or some.
They stop and glance across the desk. The principal fingers a pencil. Dr. Lucas just looks down.
I'm sorry.
I'm just a little thrown off by this.
They both sit.
Gil, Karen, you should not look upon the fact that Kevin will be going to a special school as any kind of failure on your part.
No, I'll blame the dog.
In an educational environment that's more sensitive to his needs.
All right, look. First of all, Kevin is not going to a special school. Whether it's right or not, there's a stigma. People are cruel, especially children, and I won't subject Kevin to that kind of cruelty. If we have to, we'll send him to a private school. I don't care what it costs. I'll get a second job.
Mr. and Mrs. Buckman, this is a problem that won't just go away.
Well, if we need to, we'll send Kevin to a private therapist.
That's right. Look, it's a problem. We're aware of it. But we're his parents. We can handle it.
Well, the next school year is 4 months off, so let's see what can be accomplished. Huh?
Gil holds Karen's hand and nods. Now Julie and Todd at a parking lot photo booth.
No, Todd!
He grabs an envelope.
I need to see.
No, not in the street. Please, please.
He holds the pictures over his head. As Julie jumps for them, Todd catches her and they kiss. He opens the envelope and starts to flip through the photos.
What is this?
It's the party celebrating my mother's promotion at the bank.
Grabbing the party snapshots, she hurries to the booth.
Excuse me. This is the wrong batch. This is my mother's. There should be another envelope for Buckman.
Okay.
She swallows, her face growing tense.
That was picked up already.
By who?
At home, Helen looks through the photos of Julie and Todd. She wears her brown hair cut very short above tasteful gold earrings in a business suit. Julie enters in blue tie-dyed leggings and a sweater and pauses in the doorway. As she steps inside, Helen holds up two photos.
I think this one is my favorite. This is just...
It's just for fun, Mom.
Well, I'm glad to know it's not a job. That's that Todd, isn't it? There's one where you can see his face.
Is that what bothers you? That I did those things or that I did them with Todd?
Gee whiz, Julie. There's so many things that bother me about this. I don't know how to separate them. Oh! Woo! Here's something for my wallet.
Todd is very important to me.
And we've got the pictures to prove it.
Mom.
This is your room. You did these things right here in my house?
Well, I thought someone in this house ought to be having sex. I mean, with something that doesn't require batteries.
What did you say to me? God damn it, you get back here! Open this door, God damn it, to hell! I would just like a little respect. Not a lot, just a little. Do you know why I'm having sex with machinery? Because your father left to have a party and I stayed to raise two kids. And I have no life! God damn it!
Julie packs her bags.
What are you doing?
I'm leaving before we say things for regret.
You're going to say something worse than the battery remark?
Todd and I are in love. It's not going steady love. It's love. I need him. He's my life. He touches me and I quiver.
Would you give me just a small break?
See, you can't handle it. Todd's working now. We'll find a place to live somewhere.
Gary enters, paper bag in hand.
Hi, Gary.
Hi.
Moving out, Gary.
What?
See, you've upset your brother.
Julie rolls her eyes.
Julie, I'm telling you, if you walk out of this house against my wishes, don't ever think about coming back here.
Fine.
Julie rushes out. Helen crosses the room and slams the door with all her might. In the middle of the room, she pauses, turns, and sees Julie watching her through the Venetian blinds. She runs outside.
Julie! 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 Honey! Honey, I'm always here if you need me. Sweetheart! Honey, be careful! If you want anything, just call me! Julie! Bye.
Now, Frank and Larry uncover a shiny old convertible in Frank's garage.
Oh, man! Incredible! Just incredible!
I knew you'd be the one who'd appreciate this. 3 years. Every night. Every weekend. I had dinner out here. You know, it was a piece of junk when I found it. First time I got laid was in a car like this.
Frank?
What?
Cool just finished lunch.
I'll call the newspaper.
I thought you and Larry could take him somewhere.
I am showing Larry my car.
Just plop him down in front of the TV. That's what he always does.
With a fallen expression, his mother returns to the house.
Wasn't that Super Bowl incredible? Right down to the last minute?
Amazing.
You're usually not that close, huh?
Oh.
No, that's right. And usually the winning team covers the point spread. Usually you can count on it.
Yeah, take a beating?
No, thanks. I already took one.
Leaning against the car, they each open a bottle of beer.
Anyway, I had to pay off and it's left me a little...
What do you need?
Huh? Oh, come on. Don't insult me. I didn't come here to be insulted.
Come on, come on. Putting together a deal, you gotta look like you can piss with the big boys.
You see, you know.
His eyes brighten.
How much?
Couple thousand. Three tops.
Three.
Tops.
Frank winks, then swigs his beer. Now Patty practices karate with Nathan. Nathan lowers a red kick pad.
Asa.
Ooh, sensei.
Good. You see, Grandma, Patty studies Eastern philosophy. Our future leader is going to have to be much more in tune with the Oriental mind.
Grandma shakes her head.
One more time.
Nathan, guess what?
Oh, you're home early.
Yeah, I have good news.
What?
Patty's punch knocks him over. Later inside, the slim, pretty Susan starts taking off her aerobics gear.
What's up?
I'm going to teach summer school classes. That means we'll have vacation money.
Oh, that's great. Oh.
Mexico.
Si.
She jumps onto their bed.
Gil and Karen are going to take Patty. I just want to call them.
Gee, honey, I'm really not too pro on Patty spending a week with Gil.
Why not? They offered.
I'm a little concerned about his jocularity. I mean, he's a wonderful guy. It's just he's a little, you know, lighthearted about things that we consider important.
She has fun over there. You know, she scampers, she cavorts.
Hey, try this. We take Patty with us.
To Mexico?
It's a perfect opportunity to start her on Spanish.
Susan gapes as he retreats to the bathroom.
It'll be fun.
He checks his lip for blood.
Nathan, I thought it would be nice if you and I could be alone.
We will be. We'll get two rooms.
Susan's hurt, gaping gaze follows him out.
Which one will I be in?
Patty, venga aquí. That means come here in Spanish. Por favor, please. I want you to listen to something. I've got a tape of a mariachi band, an authentic indigenous native Mexican form of music.
Sliding open a mirrored closet door, Susan pulls out a shoebox and sits on the floor. She digs through Twinkies and Clark bars, pulls out a Hostess cupcake, and takes a huge, spiteful bite. Now, Gil steps out of an elevator.
I'm Gil. Good morning.
Close to me.
He enters an office overlooking a sunny atrium. A sweating man with his tie loosened walks on a treadmill.
When were you going to tell me?
Tell you what?
Lenny called this morning and he said they were wondering where I thought we should take Phil Richards to celebrate his partnership.
That Lenny is an asshole. You believe that guy? Nobody was supposed to have that information until next month.
That partnership is mine. You said it was just held up by Ted Sergi, and then when he got back, you'd make it official.
Look, I
never said you didn't do great work. You do terrific work. Every firm does good work. Look, I know you're a lot smarter than Phil, but the guy works like a Trojan. He schmoozes clients. He brings in business. He's here nights, weekends. I own the guy, and that's what puts your name on the door.
This is really coming out of left field. I've been here 8 years. I'm the backbone of the operation. I know that. If I don't get this partnership, I gotta think about going somewhere else.
I gotta tell you, Gil, I don't consider that a realistic idea.
Why?
You go somewhere else, you're gonna have to get in line behind guys who are younger than you, who've been there longer, who are more committed, and are willing to work for less money.
Pacing beside the treadmill, Gil grits his teeth and rubs his neck.
Look, this thing with Phil is not etched in stone. I can jerk him along for the next month. Why don't you use that time to give us your best shot? Put in the hours. Dazzle me.
Gil sneers.
Dazzle you?
His boss strolls behind a large desk.
Listen, Dave, I'm having a problem at home. I really need to spend a lot of extra time with my son right now.
Then I don't know what we can do.
Dave lights a cigarette. Now, Gil and Kevin in a video arcade.
Oh, well, they're bad dudes. That's why they call the game Bad Dudes.
Okay, I should go stay with the girls. Got enough quarters?
Yeah.
Okay.
Dad?
Yeah. Gil turns around.
How come I'm seeing a psychiatrist?
Three boys at the next game look up. Gil walks back to Kevin.
Yeah, we were going to have a big talk about that.
What's wrong with me?
Nothing. Nothing. You're great.
Well, then how come...
Look.
They sit down together on a nearby bench.
You're a kid like I was. You have a lot of worries, that's all. And these doctors, they're experts at helping people with their worries. It's nothing to feel bad about.
You're a great kid, and I love you very much, okay? Okay.
Kevin looks down at his hands.
Hey, you know what I think? I think this is going to be a great summer for you.
And don't forget, you got a birthday coming up. Let's have a great party. That'll be fun, huh?
Can we have Cowboy Dan?
Who?
Cowboy Dan, the gunfighting balloon man. He was at Billy's party. He's cool.
Absolutely. It's a done deal. This is your dad talking now. Now you've got me excited. Okay, now, what do we say when we see a cute 8-year-old girl walk by?
Hubba hubba.
Hubba hubba, okay. Oh, don't tell your mom I taught you that. That'd be bad. Let's go.
Now the door to Frank's garage slides open, and he shows Cool his roadster.
Wow!
You like it?
Yeah, it's good. It's shiny.
Yeah. You know, it was junk when I found it. The first time I got laid was in a car. Story for another time.
Frank and Cool look out at the street. As a black car with dark windows speeds by, someone shoves Larry out. He rolls onto the grass, then stands and brushes himself off.
Hi, Dad. Dinner ready? What was that? Huh? Oh, some friends were just dropping me off.
Friends? Friends, slow down. They even stop.
Cool follows his dad toward the house.
Dad?
Frank frowns with bushy gray eyebrows. The scene shifts to Helen's house. She stands on the top of the brick steps, wringing her hands and squinting toward the street. In front of the house, a policeman steps out of a patrol car. He ushers Julie, carrying her bags, from the back seat. Later, she sits on a couch with her mother.
Oh, Mommy.
Helen hugs her fervently and smooths her long blonde hair.
Would you be panhandling?
I needed money for a place to stay.
Julie, you have a place to stay.
I'd have to tell you what happened.
What did happen?
I just said I didn't want to tell you.
Did you leave that time?
Yes. He promised me he was going to start a house painting business. Then he said he changed his mind. He's going to race dragsters with his brothers. He can't even drive a regular car. So his brothers came over and we got in a fight. And he said, no bitch is gonna tell me what to do for a living. He told me he loved me.
Sweetie. Oh, they say that. Then they come. Honey, what can you expect from a kid like that?
Oh, Mom, back off. The last guy you dated stole our furniture. Men are scum.
I know, sweetie. Men are scum.
Helen leans her head in her hand. Then she and Julie both look up at the same time and freeze. We see Gary nervously peeking around the corner from the dining room.
Hi, Gary. Honey, Julie's home. Great.
He leaves with his paper bag.
Come on, let's go eat lots of ice cream.
She hoists Julie up from the couch.
You want an ice cream soda?
No.
How about, do you want a, like a hot fudge sundae? Mm-hmm. You want a banana split? Mm-hmm. You want something like French fries?
Yeah.
You do. Julie!
Todd!
I thought I'd find you here.
What does that make you, Sherlock Holmes? I live here.
You live with me.
I wouldn't live with you if the world were flooded with piss and you lived in a tree. Excuse me, I'm going to the movie.
You're not leaving here until you hear what I have to say.
I'm not!
They tussle on the front
Julie,
lawn.
Julie, let go!
Helen grabs a rolled-up newspaper and starts to smack him.
Let her go!
Please, Mrs. Buckman, I love her.
Let her go! God
Julie,
damn it!
You can't
let her
run
go.
Out on me. You're my wife.
If you don't let her go, I'm going to call the... You're his what?
His wife. We got married a couple of days ago.
Helen smacks her.
Are you out of your mind?
No.
Are you out
Please,
of your
Mrs.
mind?
Mrs. Buckman! God. Julie! I didn't mean it!
God!
I'm sorry.
He kneels.
My brothers were ragging on me, and I couldn't back down. But last night, I told them. They mean nothing. You mean everything.
She looks down at him with moony eyes.
Todd.
Helen throws her head back.
Christ.
Now, Gil at a little league practice.
Okay, look lively, you're doing great. Shortstop, here it goes. All right, pick it up. Easy, now over to first. That's right, that's the way to play. That's good. All right, you're beautiful. You're a bunch of wild, young bohemians. Okay, let's go again. Okay, second base. Here we go. Now get down on it. Don't be afraid. It can't hurt you, Ben. Here we go. Get down on it. Get down on it. Get down.
Ow!
Gil winces.
Wayne, get Ben some ice.
Later, the team huddles.
All right, we're going to need a new second baseman now. Which one of you outfielders wants to try second base? Huh? Huh? How about you, Kevin? You want to try second base?
Kevin's eyes skitter under his red cap.
Okay.
All right!
Oh.
Oh, Matt, come on, none of that. We're a team. Let's be a team. Now, come on, get out there and hustle. Let's go! Yeah! Huh?
Most of the boys run to the field. Kevin makes his tense face.
Hey, Kevin. Remember, the word is fun. So just go on out there, and what you catch, and what you miss, okay?
Okay, Dan.
Okay.
They smile at each other. Then Kevin runs to second base. Catching a grounder, he throws it to the first baseman. Gil balls his fist on the sidelines.
Way to go, Kevin!
Our view glides into a close-up of Gil's face. He lets out a sigh of relief, and his jaw sets into a tight, proud line. He looks up to his left, and our view scans down an elaborate red brick building to a man in a cap and gown.
My great pleasure to introduce our valedictorian, Kevin Buckman.
In the audience, other graduates in black robes and their families smile warmly as a tall, handsome, clean-cut young man strides across the laurel-draped platform. The dean shakes his hand with great affection, then sits.
Thank you. You know, when I was 9 years old, I had kind of a rough time. A lot of people thought I was pretty mixed up. But there was one person who got me through it. He did everything right. And thanks to him, today, well, I'm the happiest, most confident, and most well-adjusted person in this world. Dad, I love you. You're the greatest.
The grown-up Kevin smiles proudly, and our view glides slowly out over the audience. Behind the sea of black mortarboards, we see an older Gil stand up. As the entire crowd rises and applauds, he gives a small, humble wave. Wearing glasses and a thin mustache, he leans on a cane, takes out a handkerchief, and dabs his eyes. Back at the baseball field, a much smaller crowd of parents cheers.
Sean, not too tired?
Sean shakes his head from the pitcher's mound.
Hey, Gil, our boy's finally going to win one game.
Way to be supportive, Lou.
The short, balding Lou puffs a cigarette. The batter hits a single to an outfielder who throws the ball to second. Kevin catches it and holds the runner on.
That's right, Kevin. Way to go. Way to go, Tommy. All right.
Now the other team's coach.
We got bases loaded. We're only one run down. Now you can do it. Get up there. Come on now.
Sean nods to the catcher, then throws. The ball pops high toward second base. Kevin holds up his glove, and Gil makes his own tense face. The ball hits Kevin's glove and falls into the dirt.
No!
Two runners swoop into home plate. Matt slams his glove on the ground.
You stink, Buckman!
Kevin smacks his hands on his legs. His head sags. One of the other boys gives Kevin a dirty look as he brushes past en route to the bench. Gil walks toward his son and holds out his hands in a loose shrug. Kevin avoids him, bows his head, and mopes toward the bench.
Why'd you make me play second base?
Gil's brow furrows as he envisions an alternate future. A college co-ed's horrified face fills the screen. Then she runs for cover. Bullet holes riddle a cooler at a sorority booth, and two motorcycles explode. Students scatter.
Someone slapped to the roof of the bell tower with a rifle!
It's Kevin Buckman! His father totally screwed him up! What's he yelling? You made me play second base! I'm sorry! I did the best I could!
A bullhorn is shot out of Gil's hand.
Nice shot, son! It's important to be supportive. Come on, let's sing one of the old tunes. When you're sliding into home and your pants are full of bold diarrhea.
A policeman pulls Gil behind a car. Back in the present, he picks up a baseball from the pitcher's mound. Squeezing his lips together, he walks back toward the bench, where Kevin sits with his head in his hands. In the background, Matt points at Kevin, and Matt's father, Lou, gestures angrily. The scene shifts to a close-up of a diaphragm. Nathan pours water into it, then watches three drops pass from its bottom and purses his lips.
Well?
Why are you pouring water through my diaphragm?
To check. To see if it's okay. You didn't know I did that, did you?
No.
Obviously not, or you wouldn't have tried this.
Are you accusing me of making that hole?
No, a woodpecker came in here, went into the bathroom, opened the drawer with his little wing, and pecked a couple of holes in your diaphragm. I can't believe you would jeopardize our plan, Susan. Remember what we read? A vast majority of truly exceptional people are either only children or firstborn with at least a 5-year separation between sibs. We agreed,
Susan. No, you agreed, and they're not sibs. They're babies, and I want to have another one.
So this is how you go about it? By vandalizing a contraceptive device?
Because you won't discuss it with me.
I did discuss it with you years ago.
Well, I think we were wrong.
Well, I think we were right. And I'm not discussing it again.
Now at Helen's house.
Todd!
Yeah?
Do you want me to cook you breakfast?
Oh, thanks, Helen. Julie's gonna do it.
Great, I'll get the fire extinguisher. All right, I'll see you guys at dinner. Sweet Jesus! What are you doing? Are you joining the Marines?
In the bathroom, Todd shaves the sides of Julie's head.
I knew you'd make a thing out of this, Mom.
Just clean up the hair.
They both have buzz cuts on the sides with long hair on top. Helen goes into the dining room as Gary peeks in.
You ready, Gary? You want anything to eat?
How long are they going to be living here?
Not much longer, I think.
She packs a briefcase.
Well, I was just thinking. It's getting pretty crowded here.
Oh, it's not so crowded. There's a lot more room since they shaved their heads.
Well, I was just thinking. Maybe I could stay with Dad for a while.
Helen freezes.
Well, I've been here a long time. Maybe I should live with him for a while.
You want to live with your father?
Kind of.
He wraps his arms around himself and avoids her eyes.
Have you talked to your father about that?
No, not yet. I thought I'd call him.
Honey, you know, you don't know your father like I do.
I don't know him at all. What's his number?
He strides toward the telephone.
Well, he'd be at work now. So that's, 206-5790.
He glances at his mother through a glass-paned partition between the dining room and kitchen. Then he looks away and licks his lips.
Yeah, it's Dr. Lampkin there. His son.
Helen sits down at the dining room table and folds her hands in front of her mouth.
No, Dad, it's not Joey. It's Gary, your other son. Well, I need to ask you something. It'll just take a second. Well, would it be okay if I stay with you for a while? A few months?
We glimpse Helen's tear-filled eyes, then see Gary's back from her perspective through the windowed partition. He closes his eyes and grimaces slightly against oncoming tears.
Okay.
His mouth buckles as he hangs up.
Oh, shit.
Her eyes well up as Gary meekly steps back into the room.
You didn't think it was such a good idea.
Oh, sweetie. I better go.
She stands and moves toward him around a table. He hurries around the other side and jogs out the front door. The scene shifts to a bunch of balloons tied to a mailbox which reads Buckman. Our view glides upward and to the right. Scattered children and several dogs chase each other across Gil and Karen's grassy yard. A man in chaps and a vest walks by, leading a boy in a cowboy hat on horseback.
Gil! Gil! When's Cowboy Dan, the gun-fighting balloon man, gonna be here?
Isn't that him?
No!
That's the schmuck who brought the horse.
I don't think he's coming.
Yes, of course he is. The man's a professional. You think he wants to put a blot on the entire balloon-bending profession? Go on and have fun, and we'll have some burgers and dogs in a second.
Let's watch the horse shit.
Yeah!
Kevin runs off with four other boys. Elsewhere, Justin spins around in circles as Susan and Patty arrive.
Patty, why don't you play with Justin?
I don't understand what he's doing.
Well, he's spinning.
What for?
No reason, just for fun.
Justin wears a shower cap.
Doesn't look like fun.
Nathan joins them.
It isn't.
You tried it?
He smirks. Justin tilts unsteadily, then falls on his rump. In the kitchen, Karen and Helen make party baskets.
Oh, so does Julie have a nice place?
Oh, yeah, she has a lovely place. Yeah, she has my place. She and that Todd are both living in my house.
Really?
Well, actually, it was my idea. You know, otherwise she was going to quit school and get a job. And, I don't know, maybe this way she'll still go to college.
Outside, Gil sits on a bale of hay.
All right. Here we go. The thumb trick, ready? There's my thumb, ready? There we go.
He pretends to slide off the top of his thumb. Patty joins the group.
What are you doing? Thumb trick. Show her, Dad.
Okay, but this is the last time. Here we go. Ready?
He does the trick again, then wiggles his thumb. Gil stares as Patty runs to her father. Nathan gives Gil a snide thumbs-up sign. Karen and Helen go outside.
I mean, Justin's going to go full-time next year, so everybody's asking when I'm going to go back to work, like I'm supposed to. And I'm thinking about it. I mean, I used to work. It was okay. But, you know, I think I'm better at this. I mean, I think I'm sort of good at it, so But then people make me feel embarrassed, like I don't have goals or something. Like I sit around here eating bonbons all day, right? Oh, I don't know.
Well, what does Gil say?
He says I should do whatever I want. I could have killed him for that.
Nathan and Susan.
What are you so upset about?
Nathan, she's weird. She's a weird child. I think a few days a week of preschool could be very helpful.
This is not the right age for Patty to be socially activated. We went
She's not a bomb. She's a little kid who has no ability to relate to other little kids.
You want her to relate to him?
Justin's head is stuck in a lawn chair.
Help, help, help!
Later in the kitchen.
See, when I met him, I was a little wild. I was a little out of control, and he kind of took me in hand. I liked that. He's very commanding. He got me into teaching. He got my shit together.
Karen puts candles on a cake.
Boy, he really turned me on.
Really? I mean, of course, really?
Oh, Nathan, I used to be hot. I know he doesn't look it, but I mean, we were like rabbits. I used to give him, you know, oral, you know, on the highway.
Karen's eyes bulge.
What?
Yeah, you know, he was always trying to get a research grant.
And you thought that would help?
No, but, I mean, he kept getting turned down, and he'd get real, real tense. So if I saw him getting, you know, really tense, I'd just lean over while he was driving. And
Susan.
Huh, what?
I just spoke to your mother. Grandma wants to stay over at Helen's for a while. Can you drive her there tomorrow?
Sure.
Karen gives Nathan a warm smile. He smiles back, puzzled. Suddenly, Justin runs in with a bucket on his head and bangs it against a wall. Stepping back, he wobbles, then leans a hand against the wall for support. Nathan winces.
He likes to butt things with his head.
How proud you must be.
Susan gives him a withering look, and he leaves. Now, Gil gives blindfolded boy a long stick.
There it is. That's right. Right there in front of you. Okay. Careful now.
A large crowd of boys in cowboy hats surrounds a colorful mule-shaped piñata suspended from a tree. Several boys take turns whacking their piñata with a stick. Gil takes the blindfold off one boy.
Now really try and hit it. Yeah.
Under a tree, Justin scratches his head while a basset hound eats a hot dog off his paper plate. Later, Susan and Nathan watch from a nearby swing set as Gil attacks the piñata himself. Nathan leads Patty away. Susan smiles guiltily. Now the piñata lies on the ground and the kids disperse. Gil continues whacking it. We glimpse a grinning Justin, then return to Gil cutting through the papier-mâché mule with a saw. The image shifts to several boys watching Grandma as she fills a balloon from a huge tank of helium. Then, closing her mouth around the lip of the balloon, she swallows the gas into her lungs.
And I was born Bill McKeever was president.
Now a young woman at the front door.
I'm sorry I'm late.
She wears a gold corset trimmed with black fur and a black lace skirt.
Where should I do it?
Who are you and what are you going to do?
I'm for Party Time Entertainment. I'm your stripper. What's the birthday boy's name? Because I painted across my breast.
Gil's jaw drops open. Karen stares. Later, the stripper hangs up the phone.
Okay, it was a mix-up. I got Cowboy Dan's card and he got mine. I'm sorry. Goodbye.
Wait a minute. What about Cowboy Dan? He is coming.
He showed up at the lodge hall and they were expecting me. They beat him severely, so Cowboy Dan ain't coming. Cowboy Dan's not coming?
Kevin makes the tense face.
Come on, Kevin, hold it together.
I knew it. I told you. All the kids are gonna hate me. It's gonna be just like Little League.
Cowboy Dan is coming.
Gil.
He's coming. Cowboy Dan is coming.
Gil's confident smile droops. Later in the backyard, two boots step into view with a pair of spatula spurs stuck to the heels with band-aids. Our view glides past a pair of jeans to Gil's face. He wears green bath mats for chaps and a boy's cowboy hat.
Howdy, partner.
You're Kevin's father. You're not Cowboy Dan.
Yeah!
That's right. They call me Cowboy Gil. As in, Gil T.
The kids stare blankly at him. Karen swallows tensely.
I saw Cowboy Dan. I didn't like the look on his face.
A goofy grin.
It was like this. So I killed him. I blew a hole in him this big.
The size of a dime.
Actually, it was about this big.
Orange-sized.
You know, when I think about it, that hole was about this big.
Football-sized.
And his guts were spilled out all over the floor. As I was walking away, I slipped around on his guts.
Kevin grins.
And a couple other people came by, and they started slipping on his guts, too.
Helen, Susan, and Grandma crack
After
up.
After I blow a hole in somebody and slip around on their guts, afterwards, I always like to make balloon animals. Yeah! Mighty courteous of you.
With a deep swig of air, Gil blows up a long, sausage-shaped yellow balloon, then a red one.
Here we go!
He crosses them in an X, twists them together, and reaches into his pocket for another. Nearby, Gil's grinning mom takes Frank's arm. He scowls in distaste. Gil struggles with a huge mass of twisted balloons.
What's he doing? I don't know.
Spinning the tangled balloons with a confused look, Gil holds them up in the air.
Your lower intestines.
Later, the kids all wear balloon hats and chase Cowboy Gil out of the bushes with squirt guns. He leads them under a trellis between two sections of the house and disappears. The kids trip over each other, trying to get out of the way as he reemerges with two massive water pistols. The kids duck around a hedge.
Ambush, you little four-footer!
Our view glides up to the roof. Gil squirts furiously, and the kids retaliate with a dozen pistols. He staggers backward as if falling, then recovers and returns to the top of the roof. With another barrage of squirts, he disappears. The kids run toward the far side of the house. Now on a horse, Gil carries a hat-shaped cake. He hands it to Karen.
Hey, get down off the horse before you hurry us out.
Honey, I gotta make a big exit.
That's Cowboy Gil's woman. Take a bow, little lady.
Hi, hi.
I sure hope that when I mosey back this way one day, you don't mind if I stop in and say hello. Well, I gotta be moseying on back to Abilene. Keep your powder and your pants dry. Kevin? I hope this is the best dang birthday you ever had. What else, buckaroos? Yippee-ki-yah-hoo-hoo-yah-hoo! Giddy-up, Thunderfly!
With one arm in the air, he gallops down the street.
What else, buckaroos? Don't try and follow me to Halloween! Yippee-ki-yah-hoo-hoo!
He tries to jump a hedge, but falls off behind it. The kids freeze. Gil bursts up, his arms held high in triumph. He limps out of the bushes, waving his hat in the air. The kids pat a grinning Kevin on the shoulders. As Gil saunters away, his knees buckle. Then he lurches and hops with bath mats coming untied on either leg. Nighttime. Justin sleeps on his knees with his bottom in the air. Karen enters in a t-shirt and a white robe and lies him down under the covers. Turning out the light, she takes a balloon hat off his bed. Our view glides up to Kevin in the top bunk.
Good night, sweetheart.
Good night, Mom.
Did you have a nice birthday?
Dad was funny.
He sure was. Well, good night, 9-year-old boy.
She tussles his hair. Gil enters and salutes.
Happy birthday, kiddo.
Dad, when I grow up, can I work where you work?
Why?
That way, we can still see each other every day.
Karen smiles, then Gil crosses to his son and leans his arms on the bed.
Good night. I love you.
I love you too.
They have a slapping play fight, then Gil joins Karen at the door.
Mom?
She turns around.
Hobo, hobo.
She nods uncertainly and looks at Gil. He shrugs, then gives Kevin a scolding look as they leave. Kevin giggles and scrunches into his pillow. Now a flashlight moves past a filing cabinet to a smoked glass door with the name Edward Lampkin, DDS. A hammer smashes it. A figure kicks the door open and overturns a table of dental instruments. The hammer smashes a light and a porcelain spit basin. Through the attacker's eyes, we see the hammer destroy a lit x-ray of someone's teeth, several plaster mouth molds, and two diplomas on the wall. Next, a photo of a mustache man with a blonde woman and a little boy, all in birthday hats. On the floor, a sneakered foot grinds broken glass into the fallen picture. Daytime. Through the Venetian blinds, we watch Helen jump out of her car and run into her house. Scowling, she grabs the padlock on his door and strides away. Inside, a black sticker reads, Anthrax Not. Oh! The door pops open. Helen freezes, holding a crowbar, and scans the room. Paper and clothes are strewn along the braided rug with a basketball and a drum set. Helen drops the crowbar on the unmade bed and kneels down to look underneath. She searches through a messy drawer, then inside the closet. On a shelf, jeans and t-shirts are stacked on top of board games. Digging through them, she spies the crinkled brown paper bag on another shelf high above and behind her head. She jumps and knocks the bag down, catching it with wide eyes. Pinching the bag between two fingers, she drops it on Gary's bed and peeks inside. Her creased brow relaxes as she dumps three videotapes onto the bed. Dragnet, Back to the Future, and the great outdoors. She picks up the Back to the Future box. Its tape slides out onto the floor. She tilts her head to read a label on the top, Wet, Wild, and Ready. Picking up the tape, she slides it into Gary's VCR and presses the play button. The image flickers to a man holding down a woman on a bed. Helen takes a deep breath. Susan enters with Grandma.
Oh, the door was unlocked.
Oh, my God.
What channel is this?
No, Gran, this is a tape.
She needs a man. Now.
No, Gran, this isn't mine. I don't watch this.
Gary appears in the doorway. His eyes bug out.
What's everybody doing in here? Did you break my wall? Susie, Gran, would you please go to my room?
Sure.
One of those men reminded me of your grandpa. God bless him.
Helen closes the door.
Gary, listen to me.
How could you break my law?
I came in here because I was afraid you were on drugs.
Why would you think that?
Because of what you did to your father's office.
What do you mean?
He found your hammer. You know, those were your initials burned into the handle.
Someone must have taken it.
Gary, just don't. Honey, you know, all these feelings. You're right to have all these feelings. You know, you're a great kid. You're a great kid, honey. You've just got a lousy dad. And you've just got to learn to say the hell with him. You see, that's good advice for both of us. The hell with him.
Gary's dirty blonde hair hangs around his face as he stares down at the floor.
I don't know what to say about the tapes. You know, well, I assume that, you know, you're watching these because you're curious about sex, you know, or filmmaking. Is there anything you'd like to ask?
Who?
Me?
He shakes his head.
What about Uncle Gil?
He's busy with his own kids.
Todd comes in.
Hi.
Hi.
Where's my wife?
She's still at school. She's got cheerleading practice.
Bitch. So what's up?
He munches a donut from a Dunkin' Donuts box. Helen shrugs and whispers to Gary.
You like to speak to Todd?
Both she and Gary turn to look at the lanky, stringy-haired Todd. He stands in the doorway, wiggling his fingers as he tries on a pair of toy X-ray glasses. Later, Helen cooks chicken in the kitchen. Todd enters from the hallway, still holding the donut box.
Can I speak frankly, no holds barred?
Please.
That is one messed up little dude. You sure we can talk straight?
Her expression toughens, and she nods. Todd nods back, sets down his box, and puts his hands on his hips.
A few months ago, Gary got his first boner. You know what that is?
If memory serves.
Oh, great. Anyway, since then, he's been, slapping the salami. No offense.
No.
Apparently, he's going for a world record. Chicken's burning.
Oh! Oh.
Todd sniffs the burning pan.
Damn. That looked good, too. Anyway, he was afraid there was something wrong with him, you know? Like he was a pervert or something. I told him that's what little dudes do. We've all done it. That made him happy.
Gary was happy?
Yeah. He even smiled. I never even knew he had teeth.
Todd crosses to the refrigerator.
I guess a boy Gary's age really needs a man around.
Yeah. Well,
He gulps from a milk carton.
Depends on the man. I had a man around. He used to wake me up in the morning by flicking lit cigarettes at my head. Hey, asshole, get up and make me breakfast. You know, Miss Buckman, you need a license to buy a dog or drive a car. Hell, you need a license to catch a fish. But they'll let any butt-reaming asshole be a father.
With crossed arms, she blinks numbly. Todd gives a violent shudder.
Well, I'm gonna pick up Julie. They're hassling her about her hair. She does look kind of stupid. I don't know what we were thinking about.
He goes into the hall.
Todd.
As he leans back in, Helen smiles.
Thanks.
Tilting his head, he ducks back into the hallway. Now Frank steps out of his gray one-story house. Our view shifts to the inside of his garage as he slides open the wooden door and freezes. Seeing the empty cement floor, his eyebrows rise. He glances at the house, at the street, then back inside. Worry lines on his forehead fade as he sets his jaw and slides the door closed. Now in a restaurant, large mechanical puppets perform on a stage. Taylor, Cool, and Kevin run up to Gil and Karen at a table.
Kevin wants to go!
How'd you go through those quarters so fast?
Another kid took Kevin's money.
Shut up!
What kid?
Never mind. We just go.
It was that kid.
Never mind.
That kid? That kid's not bigger than you. Go back and get your money.
Dad, let me handle it, okay? Kevin, do you want me to help you to get your money back?
No, can we just go? I want to go.
Okay. Okay. And that's a little kid. Justin can beat up that kid.
Shut up. Can you just shut up?
Karen grabs Kevin's arm.
What's the matter?
I lost my retainer!
Where?
Honey,
it's okay.
I put my retainer on the table.
Kevin, it's okay, honey.
Gil watches wide-eyed as Kevin frantically searches through empty wrappers on the table. Karen hugs him. Later, we scan a pile of garbage. Up to his arms in pizza boxes and clumps of old spaghetti, Gil digs through a garbage can. Karen walks down the alley behind him and pushes up the sleeves of her sweater.
Here, let me.
Where are the kids?
Your folks are driving them home. They'll wait with them at our house.
Well, that's just what Kevin needs. Time alone with my dad.
Yuck.
Gil wipes his hands with a clump of hay.
Let's just go.
Gil, they're $200. If you drop $200 in here, you'd look, right?
Karen searches another trash can. Gil crouches beside a spigot.
Let's face it, he's getting worse.
He has his good days and he has his bad days.
Why is he so high-strung? He's like a poodle.
Everything's blown out of proportion. What does he get this obsessive behavior?
Passing his hands under the water, Gil scrubs furiously.
I wish I knew.
They're going to put him in special ed.
Gil, what'd you think? That you'd dress up like a cowboy and coach Little League and Kevin would be fine?
No. I mean, no, I didn't. Yeah, okay, I did.
Well, honey, you were really kidding yourself.
Gil walks a few steps into the alley and leans on a brown metal vending machine. He gives her a bittersweet smile.
You know, when your kid is born, it could still be perfect. You haven't made any mistakes yet. And then they grow up to be like me.
He blinks, then moves back toward Karen. Later on a highway.
Oh, I'm going to be home late tomorrow.
How come?
I'm attempting to dazzle Dave. I'm trying to put together a major income property thing for one of our bigger clients.
Has Dave said anything?
Thursday when I left for Little League, he said, "Let's all thank Gil for stopping by." I didn't take it as a good sign.
Well, let's just wait and see. You know, worrying isn't going to help.
God, I'm so tense.
Karen steals a glance at him.
You're tense right now, honey?
My back is tense, my neck is tense, my ears are tense. It's like they're hot or something.
Maybe I could do something to help you relax.
I doubt it, honey.
I'd like to try.
With a coy but nervous smile, she unfastens her seatbelt and leans over. Gil glances quickly out both side windows as she lowers her face into his lap. Now our view pulls back from the steaming, dented front of their minivan as it's hoisted up behind a tow truck. Wincing, Gil holds a tissue to his forehead and walks up to Karen. Blue police lights flash behind them.
I am so sorry.
It's all right, honey. It was my fault. You just kind of took me by surprise.
So, how'd this happen?
A policeman steps up with a notepad. Gil just looks at him.
Show him, honey.
Frank with his wife.
Awfully late, Frank. You need to get cool right to bed.
He'll be all right.
Pulling into the driveway, we see Larry sliding the garage door closed in front of Frank's restored convertible. He turns and waves.
Hi, Dad.
In his everyday car, Frank scrunches his mouth into an angry pout.
Take the boy inside.
Cool peeks over the back seat.
I couldn't resist. I had to take it out for a spin. Purrs like a kitten. You're probably wondering why I took it out without telling you. I wanted to have it appraised so that you'd know how much it was worth. Only they can't appraise it unless they have all the paperwork, the registration, the proof of purchase. You got those things around?
I'm not a schmuck! You were going to sell my car.
Dad!
Look, don't bullshit me anymore! It belittles us both!
Larry licks his lips.
You out of the house.
Frank heads for the door.
Dad, they're going to kill me.
Frank stops. Turning around, he leans against the hood with one hand, places his other hand on his hip, and fixes his eyes on Larry.
Bookies?
Freaking basketball. I had a lock. This miserable son of a bitch rookie throws in a goddamn 50-footer at the buzzer. It was a nightmare. It was like he reached into my chest and ripped out
oh,
my...
Oh, shut bag. Up! How much do you owe? The truth now!
$26,000.
Jesus.
Dad, I'm never gambling again, I swear to God. But these guys mean business.
What about that $3,000 I gave you?
I took it to the track. I wanted to... run it up so that I wouldn't have to hit you for the whole amount.
What the hell is the matter with you? You're not a kid anymore. You're not stupid.
Dad, I can't get a break. I have been so close so many times, I could touch it.
Did you ever think about getting a job?
Oh, great. Oh, that is just great now. What did you always tell me, huh? Make your mark.
Make your mark. Don't be one of the numbers. Make your mark.
You misunderstood me. You weren't listening.
Oh, come on. If I called you up to tell you, hey, Dad, I'm the new assistant sub-vice president of pencil sharpening at some crappy little company, you're telling me you'd think that was great? I am better than that. I am not Gil.
A subtle twitch flashes across Frank's eyebrows. He glances at the floor, looks up at Larry, then leans back on his car.
Look, I've made some mistakes. I have to learn from them. They're gonna kill me, Dad. With pain. I'm your son.
Frank faces him with an unflinching frown. His eyes roll as he closes them, then stares ahead. The scene shifts to a flashcard showing the letter H.
Hydrogen.
Nathan holds up another card to Patty.
Helium.
More cards read H, E, and C.
Carbon.
Excuse me, honey. I don't mean to interrupt, but I've made up some new cards.
Really? Well, that's great, Mommy. I'm so glad you're back with the program. Let's do your cards.
Why don't I show them to you first and make sure they're appropriate?
Okay. Sweetheart, Mommy and Daddy will be back in 2 minutes. How many seconds is that?
120.
Excelente.
In a red and white dress, Patty watches the door close, her blonde hair in braids. In the hall, Susan holds up her flashcards.
This is the only way I can get your attention. Honey, this is really basic stuff. She's way beyond this. I'm leaving you. You're leaving me?
She flips to the next card. It reads,
yes.
A woman's foot steps out of a car. Our view glides up to Helen holding a large stuffed frog.
Thank you.
A graying mustached man smiles at her.
I really had a great time. It's been years since anybody's taken me to a carnival.
You thought there was a carnival? That was my parents' house.
You know, you're pretty funny for a biology teacher.
Well, thank you.
He wears a light blue sweater pulled over his pot belly. They pause outside Helen's house.
Would you like to come in?
Sure.
Todd bursts out the front door, chased by Gary. Gary tackles Todd on the grass.
Hi, Mom. Hi, Mr. Bowman. Good job!
Digging his knee into Todd's stomach, Gary sprints back to the door and rolls inside. Todd dives after him.
It's a nice knee drop, honey. Want some coffee?
Love some.
Kitchen's right there.
Can I ask you something?
Sure.
How come you finally decided to go out with me?
Well, my grandmother told me to. No, really. She's been staying with us, only it's a little crowded, so tomorrow I'm taking over to my brother Gil's. Hi, Julie.
Julie, I would like to introduce you to Mr. Bowman. Julie.
What's up? Did you get the Twinkies?
I found this in the trunk of your car.
She holds up a yellow crash helmet.
You're racing again, aren't you?
Yeah. So what?
So you promised, that's what?
I changed my mind.
You changed your mind.
Yeah, I changed my mind.
Well, what about a house painting?
I gave it up.
You gave it up? That was your future.
Well, Dave and Rod kind of took all the equipment and split. And I don't know where they are.
I told you not to trust those guys. Didn't I tell you?
I'm not as smart as you are, okay? I didn't get 13,000 on my SATs, okay? I'm stupid, okay?
Okay,
Julie.
Butt out.
Maybe I should leave.
No, maybe I should leave.
What do you mean, maybe?
Julie and Todd stare each other down. Then he walks out.
Todd! What is it with the women in this family that make all the men in this family want to leave?
Gary runs after him.
Well, if he thinks I'm having this baby now, he's crazy.
Julie storms into her room. Helen turns to Mr. Bowman.
Baby?
Your daughter's having a baby?
A baby?
You're going to be a grandma?
No, I'm too young. You know, grandmothers are old. They bake and they sew and they tell you stories about the Depression. I was at Woodstock, for Christ's sake. I peed in a field. I've hung onto the Who's helicopters and flew away.
I was at Woodstock.
Oh, yeah? I thought you looked familiar.
She swigs a shot of vodka. Now in Gil's boss's office.
Gil, I've spoken with Ted and Dan, and we have decided to make Phil Richards a partner.
Gritting his teeth, Gil glares at him.
Holy shit. Now, I know you're upset.
Upset? Haven't you seen the deals I've been putting together? I have been killing myself. I mean, aren't you dazzled?
You still don't get it, do you? Phil has just brought in three brand new multi-million dollar clients. He has spent the last month whining and dining these guys, getting them laid. He doesn't tell me about problems with his kids. I'm not even sure if he has kids. If this man's dick fell off, he would still show up to work. He is an animal. That's what dazzles, not the work. You can't do what he does. You hate that shit. Phil Richards,
I quit.
Oh, Gil.
Forget it. Phil brought you some big clients. You're happy.
Gil.
I'm just going to call my clients, give them the news, and I'm out of here. Friday's my last day. Don't make me a party.
Gil.
Dave.
Now at Gil's house, Kevin plays lacrosse in the foyer. One boy tackles another on the stairs as Gil enters.
Hey, this is not a playground, okay?
He storms into the living room. Taylor latches onto his leg.
Not now!
He shakes her off as three boys rush in.
Knock it off!
The boys pester Taylor and her friends, later in Gil and Karen's bedroom.
God, I can't believe they did this.
He tries to untangle a mound of videotape as Karen enters with a basket of clothes.
All right, the other kids got picked up. Ours are watching in tape, and Helen just dropped your grandma off. Let's talk.
I quit my job.
At the closet door, Karen stops and turns around.
Why?
They gave the partnership to Phil Richards. Phil Richards. This is a guy who leaves his wife and kids and then puts all his money in his girlfriend's name so they can't touch him for child support. I mean, the guy is... Anyway, I couldn't stand it. I snapped.
And you still change your mind?
What do you mean, change my mind? I quit.
I know, but did you say anything that would make it difficult for them to take you back?
Jesus, honey, I was hoping you'd be a little more supportive. It's not like I...
I'm pregnant.
Gil blinks, cocks an eyebrow, and tilts his head. Karen gives him a warm, closed-mouthed smile. Fingering the jumble of videotape, he stands and holds out his hands helplessly, struggling to form words.
Since when?
Since I am. I'm... due in February. I didn't want to say anything till I was sure.
How did this happen?
It was an accident. Anyhow, this is why I'm saying maybe now this isn't the best time for you to be out of work or starting a new job.
You know, if you'd told me there was a chance of this happening, I might not have quit in the first place.
Well, you never told me there was a chance you might quit.
It was a spur-of-the-moment decision.
Pretty big one.
So what are you saying I should do? Crawl back to work and kiss Dave's feet and get my crappy job back? I quit. If I go back now, they got me. I'm a eunuch.
You know, this puts a minor crimp in my life, too. I was thinking about starting back to work in the fall. Now I can't.
Well, that's the difference between men and women. Women have choices. Men have responsibilities.
Oh, really? Oh, okay. Well, then... I choose for you to have the baby, okay? That's my choice. You have the baby. You get fat. You breastfeed till your nipples are sore. I'll go back to work.
All right, let's return from La La Land, because that ain't gonna happen. And whether I crawl back to Dave or I get another job, it's obvious now I'm gonna have to spend less time at home.
He chucks the tape on the floor.
I'm gonna have to have business dinners, and I'm gonna have to play racquetball, and I'm gonna have to get guys laid. So I hope you don't mind if I bring a few... prostitutes home, honey, because that's what it takes to get anywhere, and I'm not getting anywhere. So whatever happens, you have to count on less help from me.
Why don't you just say what you're really thinking?
What am I thinking?
That I should have an abortion?
didn't say that. That's a decision every woman has to make on her own.
What are you, running for Congress? Don't give me that. I want your opinion about what we should do. Let's pretend it's your decision, okay? Pretend you're a caveman or your father. What do you want me to do?
I want... I want whatever you want.
Well, I want to have the baby.
Well, great. Let's have it then. Let's see how I can screw the fourth one up. Hey, let's have five. Let's have six. Let's have a dozen and pretend they're donuts. I'm really happy about the way things are turning out, aren't you?
You know, with the frame of mind you're in, not only am I not sure we should have another baby, I'm not sure we should keep the three we've got.
Well, I'm ready to discuss it. However, I can't right now because I gotta go to the goddamn Little League. 10 little boys are waiting for me to guide them into last place.
You really have to go?
My whole life is have to. Come on, Kevin, get your glove. I know what I said, but now I'm changing my mind. I have to go, you have to go. Move it.
Later on the field.
Kevin, this one's for you.
Kevin holds up his glove for a pop fly. It bounces out.
Get behind the ball. It's easier to come in.
Hi, Dad. What are you doing here?
Karen said you were here. I should speak to you a second.
Yeah. Hey, Wayne, can you take over a second?
Tossing a ball to an assistant, Gil follows his dad behind a fence.
What's up?
I need your advice.
Gil totters and looks heavenward.
Wait a second. My head is spinning.
Come on. Larry needs $26,000, or gamblers are going to kill him.
Jesus.
I'm supposed to decide whether to give it to him.
Frank sits on the team bench. Gil's eyebrows rise.
And you want my advice? Why me? Why now?
Because I know you think I was a shitty father.
Gil bites the inside of his lip on one side and hooks his thumbs in his pockets. Then he slowly crosses to the bench and sits down beside Frank.
Thank you for not arguing. I know you're a good father, so tell me, what would you do?
Gil fingers his collar and squints in thought.
You got that kind of money?
I got it. It's going to hurt. I wanted to retire next year. This will put that off for a while. A long while.
He shakes his head.
I never should have had four. You know, when you were 2 years old, we thought you had polio. You know about that?
Yeah, Mom once said something.
Yeah, well, for a week, we didn't know. I hated you for that.
What?
I did. I hated having to go through that. Caring. Worrying. Pain. It's not for me. And, you know, it's not like that all ends when you're 18 or 21 or 41 or 61. It never, never ends. It's like your Aunt Edna's ass. It goes on forever and it's just as frightening.
Gil chuckles.
It's true.
There is no end zone. You never cross the goal line, spike the ball, and do your touchdown. Never. I'm 64. Larry, 27. And he's still my son. Like Kevin, your son. You think I want him to get hurt? He's my son.
Frank stares out at the field. Gil tentatively steps up and puts a hand on his shoulder.
Come on.
With red-rimmed eyes, Frank pats Gil on both arms, then breaks away.
Oh, I'm all right. I'll figure it out.
Hey.
Frank turns to face him.
Who's to say who's a shitty father? Kevin's in therapy. We got called to school last year because Taylor was kissing all the boys. Justin keeps ramming things with his head. My career is in the shithouse.
Frank smiles, walks back toward his son, and pats him on the cheek.
You worry too much. You always did.
Frank strolls away. Gil looks down, then squints bashfully at his dad's back. Now at a game, the scoreboard shows the visiting team ahead 9-7 in the sixth inning. Our view glides past Kevin in left field to the pitcher.
Okay, let's go. Let's get him. Let's get this one. Come on, you can do it.
Sean, the pitcher, nods at his catcher and throws. The batter hits a ground ball, which slips through the third baseman's glove.
One more comment and you're out of there. I don't care what happens.
Hey, what are you yelling at him for? He's the only player you got. Hey, Matt, we need one more out, son. Wherever it's hit, you go for it. It's the only chance you have to win.
Matt gives a vehement thumbs up.
All right, come on now. Don't blow it.
All right, no big deal. No big deal. One more out. Come on. Just relax. Relax and concentrate.
The pitcher takes a deep breath as the other team's batter gets into position. Then he throws. Gil watches the ball soar upward. Kevin gulps and his eyes pop open as he raises his glove. In slow motion, Matt runs towards him.
Get it, Matt!
Still in slow motion, the batter runs toward first base. Our view scans three rows of spectators as they leap up, shouting. We look down at the shaky-footed Kevin from the ball's perspective. Racing backwards, Matt grimaces, and the runner passes second base. In close-up, Kevin's nostrils flare, and his brow wrinkles into the tense face. Gil grits his teeth and slides his hands back and forth across the bar of the fence. As Kevin's feet back up, one heel catches the other, and he wobbles. The runner rounds third. Now our view glides right from Kevin to Matt. We look down at Gil, up at the ball, then at Kevin and Matt as their bodies slam together. The ball hits Kevin's glove, but Matt knocks him down and flies back out. Falling, Kevin sticks out his glove and catches the ball just before it hits the ground. Gil leaps into a wild touchdown dance. High-stepping across the grass, he grabs Kevin out of the circle of boys, spins him around, then puts him back down. Kevin's teammates pat him on the back as Gil continues to dance. He flaps one hand back by his shoulder, skips, knee walks, then pounds the ground with his fists and feet and rolls onto his back in a joyous fit. Now our view glides up from a jittery hand to Larry at a dining room table.
I'm going to help you.
Larry's hand stops twitching.
Dad.
Frank sits down at the other end.
We see these gangsters. We agree to pay them $1,000 a month. They're businessmen. They'll see that something is better than nothing. Then, Monday morning, 8 a.m., you come to work with me at my place. I'm going to teach you the business.
Larry nods feebly.
Plumbing supplies.
And in a few years, I'll retire and you'll take over. Meanwhile, as long as you're working, and if you agree to go to Gamblers Anonymous, I'll keep paying your debt. That's it.
Wearing a gold chain and a black V-neck sweater, Larry swallows.
Okay.
He gives his dad a bright-eyed smile. Frank grins and starts to get up.
Okay. Let me just add a wrinkle. About an hour ago, I got a phone call from an associate in Chile. Big opportunity. Platinum. Now, why don't I just toddle off down there for a couple of months, see if it pans out. If it does, great. If not, we put the Frank Buckman plan into effect. Sound good?
Sure.
Frank's grin fades. Larry smacks the table.
Great. Oh, I could use a little...
2009?
ample. Ample. Well, better pack.
What about cool?
Huh? Oh, Jesus. That's a tough one. This is not really the kind of trip that... Listen, how about if...
Frank turns with a hard stare.
Don't worry about it.
Larry's smile falters. He puts his hands in his pockets and nods. As he leaves the room, Frank watches out of the corner of his eye, then folds his hands. Later, from a child's height, we watch Cool peek out from the far end of a sofa. He slowly walks toward us, swinging his arms limply, then stops in the doorway to another room. Frank sits holding the model car that was his present from Larry.
My dad's going home.
Yes.
He's leaving right away.
Yes.
Is he ever coming back?
No. Would you like to stay here with us?
Cool's huge brown eyes widen. He nods.
Yeah.
Good.
The scene switches to a busy school hallway. Susan walks toward us with an armload of books.
Good morning, Mrs. Hafner.
Hi, Michelle.
Susan? I need to talk to you.
No, Nathan, I have a class.
I want you to come home. This is very bad for Patty. She can't concentrate.
I gotta go.
No, wait.
Let me go.
Listen to me. It's bad for me, too. I love you, Susan.
Glancing over her shoulder at her class, she closes the door.
Those are words. They don't solve anything.
I can compromise. I can change.
Nathan, I don't think you're capable of change.
She enters the room. Nathan's shoulders slump as he plods down the hallway toward a large, colorful mural. Susan crosses to the chalkboard.
Okay, come on. We're way behind because of yesterday's bomb threat, so let's get going.
She starts writing on the board.
Why do birds suddenly appear?
She spins around.
Every time... You are near, just like me. They long to be close to you.
The kids gape at Nathan.
Nathan, please, I'll lose my job.
Why do stars twinkle in the sky every time you walk by?
He walks slowly toward her.
Just like me, they long to be close to you.
Nathan, we're trying so hard to keep these kids off drugs.
On the day that you were born, the angels got together and decided to create a dream come true.
This was the song from our wedding.
So they sprinkled moon dust in your hair and golden sunlight in your eyes so blue.
It's a wedding kind of a song.
That is why... All the guys in town, follow you, all around, just like me, they long to be close to you.
Susan smiles shyly.
Ah, close to you.
Nathan, you're crazy.
Susan, I love you. Please come home.
Standing behind her desk at the chalkboard, Susan gazes at her husband, then leans in, and they kiss. Wrapping her arms around him, she drops a book. Now at a drag race, two lights turn green. Two modified funny cars take off side by side. Now Todd stands beside a needle-shaped dragster. Gary bites a pen between his teeth like a cigarette. Julie paces near a low chain-link fence. She looks up as a dragster spews flame from its exhaust pipe like a rocket. Helen walks toward her through the after smoke.
Mom! Mom! Hurry, he's over there. He's gonna kill himself.
Julie,
I'm not his mother.
Please, Mommy, please. I'm so scared.
Now I'm Mommy.
He's trying to prove something. I don't know.
Julie grabs her mother's arm. Wearing a silver racing suit, Todd lowers himself into a tiny cockpit, pulls on his helmet, and crosses himself.
Oh, God, he's already going.
Julie and Helen join Gary.
In 8 seconds, he's going to be a legend.
Challenger on the power lane. Newcomer, Todd Higgins.
A quick series of images. Julie fidgeting at the fence. Todd's eyes just visible through his helmet shield. 6 flashing yellow lights, then a pair of green lights. The 2 cars zoom off. Todd struggles to steady the tiny steering wheel, then veers off to the right. One wheel scrapes a guardrail with a flare of sparks. Suddenly the car swerves, flips onto one side, and crashes into the guardrail. Julie covers her eyes, Helen her ears. Julie, Helen, and Gary sprint across the dragway. Workmen yank at the smoking car, trying to flip it over. Julie stops short a few car lengths away, breathing hard. They flip the car right side up, and Gary leans over the cockpit. Todd pulls off his helmet.
Did I win?
Julie paces and flaps her arms.
I'm all right.
Well, we'll get you the first aid. Make sure, all right?
My brother's car. I killed the car.
We'll take care of it.
Julie, come on. Let's go.
Let's get in. I can't.
What?
I can't. This is too intense.
This is marriage. Now let's get in the truck.
Julie stares at her mom, then climbs in. Gary's jaw drops as he watches them.
Come on. Let's go.
Can you do that again next week? The crowd loved it.
Yeah, sure.
That's a good job for me. Crash dummy.
Stop that. You're very important.
Yeah, why?
Why? Because you're going to be the father of my grandchild, that's why.
Todd sits on the right side of the pickup with his back to the cab. Helen sits across from him with Gary next to her. Julie gazes at Todd, then gets up, sits on his lap, and hugs him tightly. Helen's eyes well up with tears, and she covers a smile with her hands. Gary sits with his hands folded on his knees. He studies his mother, then Julie and Todd, as the truck drives away. Later, Julie and Todd walk arm in arm. Behind them, Gary looks up at his mom.
He, like, saved their marriage. That was really cool.
Yeah, well, I give him 6 months. 4 if she cooks.
You don't think they're gonna make it?
Well, you know, honey, the odds aren't good.
Then why'd you say all that? Why'd you try to keep them together?
Well, because Julie wants Todd. Whatever you guys want, I want to get for you. That's the best I can do.
I'm glad you're going out with Mr. Bowman.
Yeah, why?
Well, he's funny. And he's the kind of guy that'd be nice to. Somebody should be nice to.
I tell you, kid, I could stand that.
Now, Gil with a video camera in his living room.
Can we tape over Susan's wedding?
No.
What are we supposed to tape over?
Mom, my ears are loose.
Oh, give me, I'll fix them. Oh, your pants are on backwards. Go upstairs and turn them around. And tell Grandma we're leaving. She's still playing Nintendo.
You know your lines?
Daddy, I don't have any lines. I'm dopey.
I'll say.
Hey.
Kevin, take Justin outside and put him in his car seat.
I have to do everything. Come on, shrimp.
Hey.
Justin headbutts his stomach.
And I'm the one in therapy.
Gil blinks. A smile twitches his lips as he watches Kevin and Justin leave. Then he turns and pauses at the sight of Karen sitting at the dining room table, carefully sewing an ear onto the headband of Taylor's costume.
I love you.
I love you, too.
No. I mean, I really love you.
She pauses and looks him straight in the eyes.
I love you, too.
She goes back to her sewing. Gil nods a little, then steps away from the doorway.
Dave called. He was crying. He actually cried. He said if I'd come back to give me a corner office with new furniture and a raise. Like, that's supposed to make up for everything. Anyway, I took the job. I couldn't think. I was still high from the Little League game. Isn't that demented? That a grown man's happiness depends on whether a 9-year-old catches a pop-up? I mean, what if he missed?
But he didn't.
But he could have.
But he didn't.
But he could have.
But he didn't, Gil. You threw him 12 million pop-ups in the backyard. You cut the odds considerably. If he hadn't, ow!
She pricks her thumb.
But there's 3 of them. And you want to have 4. And then the 4th one could be Larry. And they're going to do a lot of things. I mean, baseball's the least of it. And in all those things, sometimes they're going to miss.
Sometimes they won't.
Sometimes they will.
Sometimes they will.
Sometimes they will.
What do you want me to give you? Guarantees? These are kids, not appliances. Life is messy.
I hate messy. It's so messy.
Grandma appears.
You know, when I was 19, Grandpa took me on a roller coaster.
Oh?
Up, down, up, down. Oh, what a ride.
What a great story.
I always wanted to go again. You know, it was just interesting to me that a ride could make me so frightened, so scared, so sick, so excited, and so thrilled all together. Some didn't like it. They went on the merry-go-round. That just goes around. Nothing.
She shrugs her shoulders.
I like the roller coaster. You get more out of it.
Karen smiles at Grandma's cheerful face. Gil sulks.
Well, I'll be seeing you in the car.
With her gray hair braided and pinned on top of her head, Grandma slowly toddles out through the kitchen. Karen stands up.
She's a very smart lady. Come on, Taylor, your ears are ready.
Yeah, a minute ago I was really confused about life, and then Grandma came in with her wonderful and affecting roller coaster story, and now everything's great again.
Karen throws Taylor's ears at him.
I happen to like the roller coaster, okay? As far as I'm concerned, your grandmother's brilliant. Come on, Taylor. Come on, hurry up.
Karen runs upstairs. Gil glances out through the kitchen.
Yeah, if she's so brilliant, how come she's sitting in our neighbor's car?
He looks up toward the front stairs, waiting for an answer, then takes a breath and blinks, sulking. The scene shifts to a school auditorium. 7 kids in dwarf suits and beards step through the door of a set painted to look like a cottage. Six of the dwarves turn to a little one frozen at the back of the stage.
They're not stolen. They're put away.
They're not stolen.
Another dwarf elbows her.
They're not stolen. They're put away.
They're not stolen. They're put away. What was that?
It came from the bedroom. Sounds like a monster.
Someone should see what it is.
Not me. Let Dopey do it.
Taylor, as Dopey, backs up.
No.
In the audience, Justin shakes his head. The other dwarves push her toward the door.
They're hurting my sister.
Justin runs toward the stage.
Hey, look, he's going. Get him.
He crawls under a tripod. On stage, he hits the other dwarves. Karen and Gil are stuck behind the tripod. Gil mopes back to his seat. A teacher comes out on stage. Smiling, Karen wanders back to her seat, too.
He's ruining the play! He's ruining the whole play!
I think that's a Buckles kid.
Gil's nose twitches. He starts to make the tense face, and the entire scene begins to tremble. The image of his sickened face wobbles from side to side. From his viewpoint, we see the stage full of children pitching and rolling like a ship in a heavy sea. A janitor waves at the audience beside the frantic dwarves and their teacher. Gil takes a gulp of air, grips his temples, and shuts his eyes. Beside him, Kevin points the video camera at the stage, and Karen laughs. Gil slowly slides his hands off his eyes. The pitching stops. Justin yells. The teacher and two dwarves bump into the set, knocking it over. Justin runs to his sister. Finally, a smile begins to grow across Gil's face. He laughs tentatively and watches Taylor put her dwarf's beard on a grinning Justin. Smile lines wrinkle Gil's face, and our view moves left to show a giggling Karen beside him, oblivious to his change of mood. As he turns his head toward her, his smile softens. Then he turns his whole body to face her, and she meets his gaze warmly. In close-up, we watch Gil place a hand on her stomach. Karen covers his hand with her own. Now, in a close-up of Karen's face, her smiling eyes glide up to meet Gil's. As they hug, he buries his face in her dark, curly hair. Now, a hospital delivery room.
Doing great. One more push, and the baby will be here. Bear down. Push. We're almost there, Mom. Come on. Push.
In close-up, a woman's sweaty hand grabs a handle. A man's hand with a wedding band covers it.
Push. Here comes the baby. Good. Here it is. It's a girl. Good. Congratulations, Mom.
A doctor holds up the baby.
Lobby, Dad. I think you've got about 100 relatives out there.
As the doctor lays the baby into a blanket, the new dad's shoulder moves out of view. Now we shift to the dad's point of view. He walks down a hospital hallway to a set of double doors. We scan the waiting room. Grandma looks up, then Frank and his wife with Cool. Nathan steps around a corner with Patty on his shoulders, followed by a pregnant Susan. We pass Taylor and Kevin, Gil holding Justin, and Karen holding her own new baby. Gary bites his thumb. Then we see Todd holding a tiny, sleeping infant and Julie beside him.
Well?
The new dad is Mr. Bowman.
It's a girl. Helen's fine.
He balls up his fists in nervous triumph. Then Julie hugs him as the rest of the family lines up to take their turns. Gary hugs him, then Susan, then Karen. Later, the whole clan gathers outside the nursery window and Mr. Bowman points. Our view glides downward past several other cribs to a beautiful baby squirming in a blanket beside a stuffed pink duck. Back in the waiting room, we see a close-up of Susan hugging her dad. Beaming as he backs away, Frank starts handing out cigars. The proud grandfather stuffs one into Nathan's mouth, then in Todd's. In close-up, Mr. Bowman kisses Karen and Susan on the cheek. Frank picks up Cool and gives him a big, spinning hug. A hand punches a baseball glove, and our view glides up to Kevin's face. Frank hands him a cigar, then gives one to Grandma, who pretends to smoke it. Wearing a headpiece equipped with two silver balls on bouncy springs, Nathan makes a goofy face and wiggles his head at Patty. She makes a monster face back at him. Frank pulls a no-smoking sign off the wall and cheerfully puffs a cigar of his own. Now, Taylor kisses a doll in her arms, and its head falls off. Kevin sits beside her and punches the doll's head into his baseball glove. Frank kisses his wife, and they gaze lovingly into each other's eyes. In the background, Gil watches, squinting, then raises his eyebrows at Frank with a shrug. A beaming Gary snuggles up to his new dad, Mr. Bowman. We scan a poster of a line of seated, bare-bottomed babies with their backs to us. Our view glides down from the picture to Justin, who reaches back to pat his own bottom. Taylor grins as Susan lets her listen to the baby moving in her tummy. Gil chats with someone as he diapers the newest of his kids, then picks her up. Todd holds his new baby. Julie sits down, kisses it on the head, then smiles into Todd's eyes. In a hospital room, Helen's mouth opens wide in delight. She smiles on the verge of tears as a nurse hands over her new daughter. She kisses the baby on the forehead. Back in the waiting room, Karen hands her small baby to Grandma, then steps away with tears rolling down her cheeks. A concerned Gil walks up beside her. She breaks into a wide smile and blinks up at the ceiling. Gil enfolds her in a loving hug, then pulls back to look her in the face and shakes his head a little. They hug once more. The screen fades to black.
I was born to make you happy.
This film has been described for blind and visually impaired audiences by Descriptive Video Service, a service of the WGBH Educational Foundation. Funding provided by the United States Department of Education. Descriptions read by Tony Khan. Credits roll. Featuring Alex Burrell, Clint Howard, Richard Cullman, Max Elliott Slade, Isabel Cooley, Zachary Lavoie, Allison Porter, and Ivy-Anne Schwan. Cast: Steve Martin as Gil, Mary Steenburgen as Karen, Diane Wiest as Helen, Jason Robards as Frank, Rick Moranis as Nathan, Tom Hulce as Larry, Martha Plimpton as Julie, Keanu Reeves as Todd, Harley Kozak as Susan, Dennis Dugan as David Brodsky, Leif Phoenix as Gary, Eileen Ryan as Marilyn, Helen Shaw as Grandma, Jason Fisher as Kevin, Paul Link as George Bowman, Allison Porter as Taylor, Zachary Lavoie as Justin, Ivy-Anne Schwan as Patty, Alex Burrell as Cool, Lowell Ganz as Stan, Rance Howard as Dean at College, Max Elliott Slade as Young Gil, Clint Howard as Lou, Lamont Lofton as Photomat Clerk, Erica Raffles as Amy, Jordan Kessler as Matt, Billy Cohen as Eddie, Isabel Cooley as Barbara Rice, Greg Gerard as Dr. Lucas, Paul Keeley as Kevin, age 21, Walter Vaughn as opposing coach, W. Bruce O'Donohue as umpire, Claudio Jacobells as student 1 at college, Hillary Matthews as student 2 at college, Sherry Ferguson as screaming co-ed, Todd Halliwell as track official, Maxie Pontius as safety man at track, Richard Cullman as young Frank, Dwarfs, Brittany Bow, Jonathan Bow, Michael Mickens, and Aspen Autry, Lloyd Cleek as Miles, Dana Mark as Audrey, Louisa Marie as woman teacher number 1, Cindy Vicino as woman teacher number 2, Steve Zirk as highway policeman, Emil Felsky as doctor at hospital, Charmin Talbert as nurse at hospital, Julie Lander as student in hallway, Janet Moore as irate woman in audience, Connie Adams as Cindy, stunt coordinator Artie Molesky, stunts Tom Akos, Tom Barr, Nathalie Bichard, Robert Bollinger, Dennis DeVoe, Alex Edlin, Kelly Aaron, Bobby Origi, Colette Mining, and Todd Seeley. Unit Production Manager, Joseph M. Caracciolo. First Assistant Director, Joe Napolitano. Second Assistant Director, Tony Adler. Second Unit Director, Walter von Heune. Production Associate, Louisa Bellis. Art Department, Art Director, Christopher Nowak. Assistant Art Director, Beth Kuhn. Set Decorator, Nina Ramsey. Lead Dresser, Dick Tice. Set Dressers, William A. Cimino, Linda Murray, and Nicholas Farantello. Camera, Operator Tom Priestley, Jr. First Assistant, Gary A. Muller. Second Assistant, Douglas Schwartz. Steadicam, Bob Euland. Steadicam First Assistant, David Campbell. Additional Second Assistant, Bob Wright. Still Photographer, Philip V. Caruso. Camera Trainee, Molly S. Malinger. Sound, Mixer, Richard S. Church. Boom Man, Glenn Gautier. Utility, Kevin Kirchiai. Music, Music Consultant, Becky Mancuso. Music Editor, Dan Carlin Sr. Assistant Music Editor, Patty Carlin. Music Scoring Mixer, Sean Murphy. Orchestrations, Jack Hayes. Soundtrack Album Producer, Lenny Waronker. Editors, Assistant Editors, Guy Barisi, David Siegel, Carolyn Horton, and Gaston Satizo. Supervising Sound Editor, Anthony J. Ciccolini III. Sound Editors, Ron Kalish and Biddy O'Sullivan Smith. Assistant Sound Editors, Daniel Edelstein, Basil Pappas, and Cam Chan. Apprentice sound editors, Sean Albertson and Susan Malfitano. Supervising ADR editor, Michael Jacoby. Assistant ADR editor, Richard Q. King. Re-recording mixer, Richard Dior. Electrical. Gaffer, Dick Falk, Sr. Best Boy, Rick Falk, Jr. Rigging, Frank Ladera and Norman Zuckerman. Electricians, Luke Halprin, Patrick Meng, Rob Scott, Bill Smalling, and Gary Ware. Grips, Key Grip, George Pastos, and Ed Knott III. Rigging, Casey Osborne and Craig Tonkin. Set Grips, Jim Crapser, Sean McFall, and Kevin Knott. Props, Property Master, Nicholas J. Romanek. Assistant, J. Patrick Call. Construction, Coordinator, Harold Collins, Jr. Foreman, O. C. Whitten. Head Carpenter, Peter Damian. Scenic, Charge Man, John Balling. Painter Lead Man, Norman E. Weber. Standby, Lewis Bowen. Special Effects, Kevin Harris and Bob Cooper. Production, Second Assistant Director, Randy N. Barbie. Script Supervisor, Cynthia Strait. Coordinator, Wendy Haas. Assistant Coordinator, Sandra D. Boyacek. Assistant J. Caracciolo, David Grant. Unit Publicist, Andrew Libschultz. Accounting, Controller Kathleen McGill. Accountant, John Gaskin. Payroll, Dennis A. Crick. Assistant, Patricia Rivers Gillis. Makeup Hair. Makeup Artists, Fern Buckner and Peter Rona, Jr. Hairstylist, Romaine Green and Donna Green. Mr. Martin's Makeup, Frank Griffin. Mr. Martin's Hair, Linda Trainoff. Wardrobe. Assistant Costume Designer, Lillian Pan. Men's Costumer, Mark Burchard. Women's Costumer, Melissa Binder. Mr. Martin's Costumer, Dennis Skunderward. Assistants, Kathy Bird and Jim McEwen. Locations. Location Manager, Peggy Coleman. Assistant, G.E. Baldwin. Casting. Casting Associate, Robin Allen. Extra Casting, Ellen Jacoby Casting International Limited. Casting Assistant, Florida, Mary Krausman. Transportation. Coordinator, E.W. Sonny Adkins. Captain, Bill Battles. Co-Captain, Ralph Estarada. Picture Vehicles, John Weiser. Craft Service, Marilyn Tillman and Joseph Esposito. Production Assistants, Mary Antonazzi, Ty Arnold, Jeff Cannon, Marianne Cutter Shavarli, Tony M. Ellis, Dean Garvin, Greg Hale, Megan Harris, Polly Ann Mattson, Carol Richbart, Rose Topping, and Jim Tosney. Florida Casting, Ellen Jacoby Casting International Limited. Negative Cutting, Ray Sabo. Color Timers, Bob Higgins and Dale Caldwell. Title and Optical Design by Howard Anderson Company. I Love to See You Smile, written and performed by Randy Newman. Produced by Lenny Waronker. Randy Newman appears courtesy of Warner Brothers Records. Pigs in Zen, written by Eric Avery, Perry Farrell, David Navarro, and Stephen Perkins. Performed by Jane's Addiction. Produced by Dave Jordan and Perry Farrell. Courtesy of Warner Brothers Incorporated by arrangement with Arner Special Products. Close to You, written by Burt Bacharach and Hal David. Soundtrack album available on Warner Brothers Records, cassettes, and CDs. Post-production sound by Magnaflex. Score recorded at the Burbank Studios. Score mixed at the Complex, Los Angeles. Lighting and equipment supplied by Lee Lighting Orlando. Filmed with Panavision camera and lenses, colored by Deluxe, Dolby Stereo, and selected theaters. Special thanks to the City of Orlando, EDC, Orlando Film Office, the State of Florida, the Landmarks Center, the Landmarks Group, University of Florida, Mystery Funhouse, Orlando General Hospital, Major League Baseball Properties Incorporated, and AMC Theaters. Filmed at Universal Studios, Florida. Copyright 1989 by Universal City Studios Incorporated and Imagine Entertainment Incorporated. All rights reserved. The characters and incidents portrayed and the names herein are fictitious, and any similarity to the name, character, or history of any person is entirely coincidental and unintentional.